Final hour, Robbie and Rex Row, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Thursday morning. We head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, gents. How are you guys doing this morning?
Doing really well. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. Charles, we do have some Titans fans that are upset. The schedule comes out last night, and there are no primetime games for the Titans. Now, the Titans did go 3-14 last year and were the worst team in the league. So you have to keep that in mind. They do not also have the number one overall pick in Cam Ward. So are the Titans being disrespected, number one? And number two, anything in particular stand out to you about the rest of the schedule?
I mean, it's rough. That's definitely rough with the zero primetime games. I thought they'd at least get one, given that they, you know, first pick in the draft, Cam Ward. But I don't know. I mean, the whole Cam Ward experience this far, in terms of like how the NFL has celebrated it, doesn't it feel muted, right?
Yes.
I mean, we talked about this coming out of draft. We're like, man, we're like, let's get Cam Ward out of the way as quickly as possible so we can talk about the Travis Hunter, you know, that trade. But, you know, even then you can circle back. You can talk about the guy a little bit more. And it sort of felt like since then that's what the experience has been. And I don't know if some of that's just because, you know, how critical everyone is about the quarterback, you know, class and, you know, where Cam would have ranked in, you know, the 2024 class and, you know, all these different things. But, yeah, I was a little I think they should take it personally, organizationally. You know, I think ownership should take it personally. You know, Amy might want to have a conversation with Roger Goodell and go, like, really? We're not the smallest market team. We're not Jacksonville, right? I mean, Atlanta, how many primetime games did Atlanta get? Five?
I got five.
Like, I mean, come on.
Miami
like
got five.
For Atlanta, seriously? Miami, five? I mean,
that's wild.
You know? It's right. Miami was not a good team last year at all. And there's a constant, you know, cloud hanging over the organization of like, is Tua even going to be there, you know, for how many of these games? Like, you're constantly worried about a concussion issue. You know, Atlanta, you can't tell me Penix is a proven commodity and you're giving that team five primetime games. I think it was a slap in the face. For sure. And this is the type of situation that this is where your ownership's got to step up and have a conversation with the commissioner and go like, what's the deal here? Like, how are we, you know, not given a single primetime game? And then you have these, you know, no NFC South team should be getting five. And the Titans with the first pick in the draft and Cam Ward gets zero, particularly. And, you know, I don't want to say this is how it's going to go, but look, Jaden Daniels transformed the Washington Commanders last year in a way that no one expected. And certainly if that was anticipated, you know, that's a team that would have had, you know, not, and they had primetime games last year. But I mean, it's, I guess maybe this is also what's, you know, flexing is for later in the season. You know, let's see what happens. Maybe it unfolds in a way for the Titans that, you know, later in the season, the league starts to eyeball some games to say, look, is there a game we can flex? The start of the schedule, I thought, it's tough. You know, it's, I mean, the Broncos on the road, out of the box. It's a really good defensive team. It's, you know, they've poured a lot into the offense this offseason. You don't know what you're going to get out of Knicks, I guess, in year two for sure. I mean, everyone, we all thought C.J. Stroud was on the road to the Hall of Fame, you know, heading into year two. And obviously it was a slump for him. And, you know, so we don't know if maybe that's going to be a more competitive game. I will say this too, the Broncos and the Rams back to back 1-2. I mean, that sucks. Like, it's a really rough start, but it is difficult for teams to scout, that first and second game, especially the first game, because you're like, well, what are we looking at? Like, we don't have, you know, there's nothing in the exhibition games to really show us anything. Now we have to go back to 2024 and look at tendencies. So what are you really scouting? And you're going to be starting a quarterback they're not familiar with. They have no idea what Cam Ward's going to look like coming out of the box. And, you know, so you'll get – I feel like every week one there's an upset that kind of leaves our jaws wagging. We're like, what the heck just happened? Jacoby Brissett went into Cincinnati last year and beat Joe Burrow. I mean, the you know, the New England Patriots were trash, right? It's a terrible team. And yet they go into Cincinnati and beat a reasonably healthy, you know, Bengals team on the road in week one. So it can happen. You know, I don't want to just automatically be the downer and be like, oh, yeah, you know, it looks like they're going to start 1-3. You know, maybe the Colts are functional by week three and Daniel Jones is the starter. You know, could it be an 0-4 start? I don't want to say that's not possible, but, you know, everybody's just got to relax a little bit. This was a bad – it was definitely a bad schedule, you know, reception, and I know everybody's down on – Brian Callahan worried, but have faith. The second you see Cam Ward out there throwing in a Titans uniform, you'll get some good feelings. We'll build up eventually. Every training camp tour I go onto, I go into some franchises where I'm like, oh, this just seems terrible. And then I walk in and there are reasons to be optimistic and, you know, you feel, I don't remember many preseasons where I walked out of facilities feeling like, okay, this team's just going to be, you know, positioned for the first or second pick in the draft. You always feel like, okay, they got a chance. So just breathe a little bit and know that, yeah, slap in the face in terms of the primetime games and definitely a tough start, but let's not be all doom and gloom. Every week I feel like I'm trying to, like,
make people feel better.
Instill some optimism, right? You know, or defend Callahan, or, you know, just try to have people just relax a little bit. Just focus on Cam Ward, right? Like, a lot of the season should be focused through him. Well, and you never know what you can get out of him.
Well, I wanted to talk about that a little bit. We've just been talking about, I guess, here's something I believe. I don't believe Cam Ward is going to be good this year and beyond. Well, I mean, I guess we'll just say this year. I don't believe he can succeed if Callahan doesn't do his job well. There are fans who just are so out on Callahan. It's like, even if he does succeed, you know, this guy just rides coattails and it's despite him. I don't think that's feasible. I don't think that's realistic. What do you say on that? And you know, like, Callahan had a bad first year. I think you can make a lot of excuses for him. We're going to find out about him as a head coach. But do you think that he could be up to this job?
I think you have to see him with another quarterback. Okay, like I guess for people who are just like, oh, Callahan, you know, everybody's out on Callahan, and do they think Levis is a great quarterback? Like, honestly.
Some, I think, might.
There are some people who would like to see him get another chance.
Really?
I mean, not a lot, but...
Not a lot.
I mean, I don't... You saw some of the decisions that were made, right? It wasn't... Callahan wasn't making those decisions, right? I mean,
Callahan was stunned at some of those decisions,
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't staring down a wide receiver and throwing pick sixes. He wasn't, you know... I mean, I don't want to keep going back to the Carson Wentz comparison, but, I mean, like, there's only so much you can do when you send somebody out on the field and they're just doing inexplicable things with the football that you cannot do. You can try as much as you want to coach that out of a player, but if it is who they are, what was he supposed to do? Was he supposed to tell Levis, we're just going to hand it off 40 times a game? You're not going to throw it. I mean, they even got to the point where they were protecting him as much as they could and it was still bad. So, you know, the offensive line, that's another thing too. Like, it's, functionally, that offensive line should have been better, and it wasn't, you know. And, I mean, you pin that some of that obviously on the coaching staff, but you went out and you spent a ton of money on a left tackle for a reason this offseason. You know, you continue to, you know, pour resources into the line and hope that it comes around with coaching. I to answer your question, Joe, if Callahan is bad, if he's just bad, no, Cam Ward's not going to succeed. Like, the team's not going to succeed. It's like the Eberflus question last year. You know, people are like, what if Matt Eberflus just isn't a very good coach? What if Frank Reich's not a very good coach, you know, when he's dealing with Bryce Young? And it's like, no, it's going to be a bad experience. It's going to be a bad team, and you're going to replace him. And that's not a great merry-go-round to ultimately be on. But at least see him with a better quarterback, right? I mean, I think personally this is his opportunity to show. Is he, you know – What does Callahan bring to the table with a different player who you know, albeit it does have a penchant at times to force things and, you know, make some mistakes and have some overconfidence. But if Cam Ward looks like a good player, they're pointing in the right direction, he's making strides, you know, then you have to have the conversation of how much of this is the quarterback and how much of this is the head coach or the tandem together. But, you know, I think people just got to – unless you truly believe Will Levis was ruined somehow by the Titans, and if that was the case, teams would have come to acquire him straight up. Like, if Will Levis – A, he wouldn't have slipped to the second round of the draft. Like, just read the – like, let's read the room here. He was supposed to be a top, you know, 10 pick, top 5 pick, slides to the second round of the draft. You know, we hear all the, like, you know, some teams didn't like him, how he presented himself, this, you know, or the some of the things he did in college, you know, his play declined and, you know, saw it on the field. How much of this are you going to sit there and go, no, he's still a great player. It was a Callahan problem. It wasn't a Will Levis problem. Okay, well, then you're out then. You're just going to be out until Callahan proves otherwise. So I'm willing to give him a shot with Cam Ward and at least see how the offense looks. If it's still terrible, then again, you have the Matt Eberflus conversation where you're like, okay, we've seen this. And again, he's a defensive coach, but still as a head coach, as a leader, you're like, okay, we've seen this. We've seen it a few times. They've changed things. You know, they moved the furniture around. Nothing changed. It's still ugly. You got to move on. I don't think we're there yet with Callahan, and it's unfortunate that some people are just dead set that that's how they feel.
So Charles, Derrick Henry yesterday lands a 2-year extension with Baltimore, $30 million, $25 million guaranteed, coming off a year where he ran for over 1,900 yards at the age of 30. So you're talking about I mean, we know Derrick Henry around here. He's an absolute freak of nature. So what do you make of that deal? And how long do you think Derrick Henry can continue to do this as he moves forward here in Baltimore?
It's a tough question to answer because I didn't think he was capable of doing what he did last year. Even going to Baltimore, where I was like, okay, you're going into a system where you know so much is predicated on running the football, and they know how to do it well, and you know they know how to scheme for it. Plus, you have a dynamic quarterback in the backfield that, you know, changes how defenses can just, you know, stack up against a running back. I do think Lamar Jackson is probably a little bit of a career extender for him because there's just never been a quarterback to line up with a dominant running back like this, who is as dominant a runner, is someone who can create things off script and keep a defense far more honest than maybe most quarterbacks can. I mean, look, Lamar Jackson is arguably the best quarterback in the league. If you want to go back to when he was drafted till now and statistically just really look at it, you could make a very good argument that Lamar Jackson is the best quarterback in the NFL, and in a way that performs in a way that most other quarterbacks can't, that changes and probably elongates the career of a Derrick Henry. That said, I don't know. Historically, I look at the bigger backs, particularly the guys that are super physical, and I feel like when they truly hit that shelf, they hit it hard, right? So I'm thinking, like, for someone that fans would be familiar with, like Eddie George, right? Like when Eddie George, when it was gone, when the tank was empty, we knew it immediately. We were like, this looks different. And Edgerrin James, same deal. Like Edgerrin James was a guy who, very physical runner. When the tank was empty, it was empty fast. And I think Henry is a better player overall than those two, you know, and physically he's different than those two. And again, the quarterback, you know, pairing him with Lamar Jackson, it's like a weird analogy, but it's like when you kind of have an old dog and you bring a puppy in the house and you put them together, like the old dog it's rejuvenated. That's kind of how I feel like it went for him in Baltimore. Now that said, it's hard for me to believe he can repeat almost, you know, running for 2,000 yards last year, granted 17 game schedule, but I mean, just the absolute dominance of last year to me was so stunning. I mean, to rush for almost 6 yards a carry was just, it was shocking. I think, you know, a couple years left, you know, I give them, but I think that shelf is coming. You know, maybe it's 32. Maybe they get a good 25 out of them, maybe a good 26, and then ultimately it's over. But I don't know. What do you guys think? It's.
I think you're drinking some haterade personally, but hey, man, keep praying on his downfall.
You think things have changed that much? Like, and like, explain to me how you think the dynamics of how bodies, like, tell me how running backs at 32, like, this isn't like a quarterback situation. So you tell me how running backs who accrue nothing but hits and punishment, particularly big guys who are upright runners. You tell me how that's suddenly changed. Like, if you want to say, hey, he's just a unicorn, he's something we've never seen.
I think we're already there, right? I mean, I think especially because the last 2 years here behind a bad offensive line, I mean, he took way more punishment than he gave out.
Right.
But last year
right.
he got back to, again, a perfect situation for him, perfect scheme, quarterback, all that.
Yeah.
And he's obviously the workouts every offseason, people make a beat, but they are absurd, right? I mean, the stuff he does, I mean, I in all seriousness, I wouldn't be shocked if you're right, if like in a couple of years it's a lot different. But I think he has already hit unicorn status. So I'm keeping an open mind.
How long did that last?
Well,
I
don't know.
Go to 35 being like a first team all pro runner. Like,
I think the way
1500 yard season in 2028.
No, but I think that like he could be a little bit more of a. Oh, he's still getting 700-800 this year when beyond when we thought possible. You know what I mean? So I think a year or two of like high level production possible, but I don't know that, you know what I mean, like instead of totally like Eddie George was like, oh, he goes to the Cowboys and okay, bye, your career's over. I don't right. know with Derek and the things that he does to prepare himself, I could see him pushing it to still being like an asset for someone in this league, you know,
sure,
beyond what we think possible.
Well, again, he went from like Edgerrin James went from Indianapolis to Arizona, right? And it wasn't even like Arizona wasn't a terrible, like, I would say that Eddie George finishing his career at 31 in Dallas was just a rough, you know, far more bad place, a bad landing spot to put him, even more than Edgerrin going to Arizona. It's opposite with Derek. He went from, you know, as you said, accruing a ton of hits, getting beaten up behind an offensive line. You don't go from averaging like what in 2023? What do you have? Like it's like low fours, right? 4.2 a carry, right?
It was 4.2 on the dot.
He had no chance in this terrible offense. Yeah,
to five, you know, to literally your best ever, you know, rushing, you know, per touch, 5.9 yards is insane. And if we saw that at like a 23-year-old Saquon, you're like stunned. So. He landed in the absolute perfect place, but he's going to be 31. You don't know what if an injury happens. That's another thing too. Like we're just assuming like he's not going to get injured. There's not going to be a shoulder that pops up all of a sudden, which can completely destroy the end of your career. There's not going to be a knee. We're just presuming that he's going to be in perfect health. I will ask you this: what's the crux of the curiosity there? Are fans? Titans fans sitting there going like, we let this guy out the door. What a huge mistake. That's part of the, you know, because I can tell you organizationally, he would have not functioned at all like that. Like in 2024 behind the Titans line, it would not have looked anything like it looked like in Baltimore. So I guess what's the crux of the argument here, the conversation?
Well, I just think number one, it's where he's gone. Like Titans fans hate the Ravens, and the fact that he's ended up right. there I think is very painful. But I mean, then you watch him run for 2,000 yards last year, and you come back to, you know, the money part of it, and some Titans fans feel like they let him walk out the door. Now, the point that I've always brought up is, like, Derrick Henry, if you're him, probably wanted to get out of here and go win.
Yeah.
So I think that's the one I keep going back to.
And not keep running into a brick wall.
Not keep running into a brick wall the way
he was. A terrible line. Right.
Yeah, it's not even – I mean, okay – you can take handoffs from Will Levis or Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
He can run line a Ravens offensive line in a scheme that is built to churn out a massive amount of rushing yardage, or you can go and, you know, run into stacked boxes because, you know, Treylon Burks never made it, you know, because the wide receiving core is flat because, you know, the offensive line is falling. I get it, it's painful, I understand it, but you can't look at Derrick Henry in Baltimore and go, well, geez, we let that get away. It's not the same, not a one-for-one, it's not even close. So I guess it's an interesting conversation to have, but I still believe things work out the way they work out, you know, health wise for running backs for a reason. And yeah, I could see him getting to maybe two more seasons of high end production. I just don't know. Like, okay, what's the point of the conversation? Like, it would have never happened in Tennessee. The team wasn't built for it. And as you said, he did want to go to Baltimore. He did want to play in Baltimore. He did want to play with Lamar Jackson. And it's worked out. So it is what it is. And, you know, you're going to have to watch him finish out his career with a flourish in another franchise.
So, Charles, with the schedule release, it was an interesting and I know this isn't the first time it's been brought up, but my buddy Matt Barrows wrote this piece yesterday. I wanted to get your thought on it. I don't think we've talked about this before. If we have, I apologize. But the 18 games, you know, is obviously it's been – I've always felt inevitable, but also there right. There is some serious rhetoric, at least coming back from the NFLPA, about how this is already too much. But – what about the idea, the 18-16 idea, which is 18 games, so they get that inventory, but the players can only play in 16 of the 18 games or something like that? Do you think that could ever get off the ground?
I don't, because you have to sell. Like, part of the reason why the NFL is pushing for the 18 games is because they're going to tear up their TV deal. And they want to sell, like at the NBA, when they redid their TV deal, the NFL's sitting there going, oh my God, like we're leaving like billions of dollars on the table right now locked into this deal. We need to tear this up as soon as possible. And when we tear it up, we want to sell to all these partners, you know, this a larger schedule. And if we have 18 games, we can sell more games to whether it's Amazon or, you know, whatever networks want to get involved in this, Peacock or whoever else, you know, that can't even be seen right now. And also drive more games overseas because they could continue to build this 33rd NFL team in the aggregate in the overseas games because they want to sell the TV contracts overseas abroad as well. You know, that's how they see the money flowing in. You can't then stare at networks and go, yeah, you know what? We're going to take Joe Burrow off the field to, you know, two of these 18 games. So we're going to take Saquon Barkley off the field, two of these 18 games. How do you do that? And then like what partner ESPN is going to sit there and go, no, we're not taking two games.
Do that for the prime game. You take him off for the prime game.
Yeah,
the Netflix game.
Yeah. There's no way. I mean, there's, you know, no NFL partner is going to sit there and go. And I do think, especially it really drives home with the quarterbacks. You can't take Patrick Mahomes off, you know, out of the saddle for two games of the Kansas City Chiefs. Nobody wants to watch the Chiefs with a backup quarterback, right? Like that's just, I get it. I understand it from a health perspective. But they'd never, what fans I think don't understand here, and what I think even players don't understand when you talk about the rhetoric, players can complain all they want. Well, we don't want to do this. It's too many. You're going to lose. You're going to lose because you've never had the ability to go, okay, we don't want that. So rather than do what we've always done, which is eventually belly up to the table, negotiate a larger share of the revenue pie or whatever else we want to change in the offseason, get whatever we can get. We're going to strike and we're going to, or you're going to lock us out, whatever it is, and we're going to force you to miss games. We're not going to show. And we'll dissolve the union and we'll miss games. And then, you know, you can decide in October when you've lost billions of dollars because we're not playing and you tried to put together, you know, teams of, for lack of a better term, scabs, then you're going to relent. The NFLPA, the players' unions, never had the ability to make that happen. And that's why they always lose. That's why they'll always lose. That's why NFL owners sit there and go, we know eventually they'll break. So they'll give in to the 18 games. And I think what's interesting about the union is when you had the change in leadership and the new regime comes in and initially sounds amenable to an 18-game schedule, like comes out of the box basically saying like, okay, you know, we're listening rather than doing the saber rattling that the previous regime would do, which is like instantly say no to everything and you constantly say no. the players kind of freaked out, and they're like, wait, what are we doing? Like, we're actually talking about entertaining this. And so if you look from the Super Bowl in February 2024 to the Super Bowl in February 2025, the message changed radically in the union, where, you know, February 2024, I was like, yeah, you know, well, it's like kind of like we're open to talking about it or whatever. We'll see. And then February 2025, it's like the players don't want the game. That's because the players all freaked out and basically told the union, like, no, we don't want this. And then the union had to change its message. But it's not – the NFL wants it. They'll get it. And unless players are willing to erase games, that's not going to change. Their best opportunity right now is just to figure out what exactly can they change about how the season functionally works and how much more revenue can they get to make this, you know, worth their while. But I just don't ever see the NFL agreeing to removing players, you know, two games a season. It's just, 'cause I just don't know how you would sell that. I don't know how a TV partner would react when you're taking, you know, superstars off the field a couple games a season. And, you know, how do you even determine who would have to, you know, shoulder that load? And by the way, that would materially damage the amount of money that I think they would get at the negotiating table. You're going to get a lot more if you can guarantee, hey, we're going to push them to play all 18 rather than we're going to push them to play 16. We'll figure that out later.
Charles, I hope you really enjoyed NFL schedule release day, one of the most mystifying days of the year to me, where we already know who everybody's playing, but by God, we make a big deal of this schedule.
My favorite part, though, is like we know the opponents. We're just finding out the dates, blah, blah, blah. It's great when you tune into all the networks and they're kind of like, you know, forced to be like, oh my God, this is the craziest. This is so wild. And I'll say this, teams have done a good job of making it entertaining from the social media perspective. That's always been kind of fun, kind of watching them rip each other. But it's, if you watch some of the networks yesterday, you can just see in the room, there are some people who are like, what are we doing here? Like, why are they, like, they just don't want to be there.
The Bears and Packers are playing this year? Holy cow, everybody. Did you know?
Yeah. There is some intrigue because I'm like I sat down and I'm like, because we have to write something. So they're like, you got to write something, figure out something to write. I'm like, well, what do I care about here? And I'm like, all right, well, when the schedule comes out, here are the things I'll know. I do kind of want to know when Joe Milton's going to start his first game for the Cowboys, which is obviously going to be an exhibition game, right? And the reason I want to know that is because there's going to be drama, right? Milton's going to go out and he's going to do crazy stuff, and Cowboys fans are going to lose their minds, and they're immediately going to go, maybe if Dak struggles, this should be our starting quarterback. So I kind of want to know, like, who's Milton going to face? You know, who's he going to start against in the exhibition season? I want to know, for the Titans, I was looking at that Browns game. I'm like, if that's late enough in the season, Shador might be starting for the Browns at that point. I mean, frankly, he might be starting game one. But I'm like, if it's late enough in the season, that could be a Cam Ward versus a Shador Sanders game, which is interesting. I'll watch that, regardless of what the records are. Well, when it came out, was it week 14? I'm like, yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Like, that's interesting to me. So there's, you know, there's certain aspects where I think it's, you know, to me, the Chargers preseason is interesting because Trey Lance is actually going to play in the preseason, and Jim Harbaugh pulled Alex Smith's career off the scrap heap. Maybe Trey Lance has finally gotten to a coach and an offensive coordinator, you know, who can turn around. So there's just certain little wrinkles that I think are interesting in terms of like how it's slotted. But overall, yeah, I mean, we're just. What did you guys? By the way, now that you know how they start, I'm curious. I'm sure you guys have done the like, oh, let's figure out the wins and losses. What do you think the record's going to be?
I had been a very optimistic 6 games. That's as high as I could go.
5-12.
Oh my God, you guys are. Geez.
I mean, someone's got to suck in this league, right? These guys are as good in that candidate as any.
Yes, they are.
Oh, every week is like, what if Brian Callahan's terrible?
I'm just saying.
Can Cam Ward make it?
Charles, great stuff as always, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, take care, guys.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest. We'll react to what Charles had to say coming up next. Robbie and Rex Row, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Row, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Appreciate Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports for being with us in the last segment. What did you make of Charles's take on the Derrick Henry part of this?
in Baltimore and how much longer Henry can play at this level.
What a hater. Like someone brought up in the text line, he's comparing him to Edgerrin James now.
I mean, Edgerrin James, a Hall of Famer.
He mentioned him, yeah. Edgerrin James probably gets a little bit of a – Edgerrin James was a hell of a player. I know. Now, Edgerrin James, a lot of people say the same thing that I just said about Emmitt Smith earlier, right, which is he was a little bit of a passenger on an incredible offense. And I think there's – I mean, I think there's truth to that. Also, you know, 12,200 yards and 11 – see, I mean, yeah. Pretty freaking good player, man.
We didn't get with Charles to your take of Emmitt Smith being the 48th best running back in league history. We'll have to do that next week.
And by the way, now that I think about it, put Edgerrin James ahead of Emmitt, too.
There you go.
Yes, yeah, so that was – yeah, that might have been a little much. But – I hear what Charles is saying, and
Remember Lorenzo Neal? Put him ahead.
Who we got on here? We got work done on here? What we got? How about Amon Green, a nice Packer legend, huh? Zeke. Ezekiel Elliott, 9,000 yards.
Cam Scataboo's already ahead.
Thomas, yeah, I like that kid's humility. I like his approach. No, but I think – I mean, look, Charles is probably right. With Derek, it's like I think this year could be another huge production year. The year after that, right now, like he's trending to where I think he could have a couple really good years, and then how much more after that can you really expect? But I think he can. It depends. Does he want to hang around and at some point almost become like a short yardage guy, you know, and stuff like that? Maybe not.
I'll put it to you this way: I will be surprised if he comes anywhere near 1,921 yards this year. Now, yeah, but I could see on that team at his age, I could still see, you know, 1,400.
Yeah.
And if you put up another year, 1,400 yards at age 31, I mean, it's pretty darn good, man. So, like, to me, it's less about, like, does he have another 2,000-yard season in him? Probably not. But what if he's got three more years at, you know, let's say he's 1,400 this year and he's 1,200 the next year and he's 1,100 the year after that. I mean, that still starts to – accumulate pretty quickly right there.
Right. Like if he has 1,400 this year, he moves into 10th place and edges out Tony Dorsett.
Yeah.
For 10th on the all-time list. And then you're very close to Dickerson, Bettis, LaDainian Tomlinson, Curtis Martin. Man, there's one, you know, who's, again, great, you know, heck of a player. Maybe he's a little underrated, but, man, 14,000 yards in 11 seasons. You don't think of him as one of the greats. At least I don't. I think of him as a guy who's a really good back. But yeah, no, Derek. All of a sudden, so if he does what you just said, so then he's going to end up. Yeah, you know, he's going to be right there, knocking on the door of Adrian Peterson at fifth, and right behind Barry Sanders at fourth. I mean, that is rarefied air.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm with you from the standpoint of, you know, I thought that there was a chance that when he left the Titans, that you know he was turning 30, and that the best days were behind him. And that was going to be what it was. And then by the numbers, I mean, he did not reach 2,000 yards. He was right on the doorstep of it. But from a yards per attempt standpoint, he had the best year of his career last year at 5.9.
The fit could not be better.
No,
with
it's a
the
great
Ravens
fit.
And Lamar and what he does to the running lanes, right, with his threat to run. And I think Derek Mason said this yesterday, Henry, pure runner, might be like just the best pure runner if you don't. You know, if you take out the receiving and the all-purpose situation in the past however many years, and you put that in there with Lamar and just their offensive line, you couldn't find a better fit.
I think that's subjective in terms of what you consider, because, I mean, I still think, like, Barry Sanders just with the ball in his hand is the hardest guy to tackle ever. Some people would say Jim Brown, I mean, no, you know, different era, but all that. But, yeah, I mean, the power and speed combo of Derrick Henry is – it's not quite like anybody. And that's a great point, of course, on the fit. I think someone on the station might have said that all along that the, you know, that's where he should have gone.
Yeah,
but I don't remember. I don't know.
Yeah.
Very humble.
Very
hashtag humble, hashtag blessed.
I'm going through Titans history. How many running backs you think are better than Emmitt Smith? Chris Brown, put him in there. He had 1,000 yards 1 year.
Antonio Andrews, who Kaharski said yesterday, the worst running back in Titans history. It is amazing to think of Marcus Mariota's first backfield with Bishop Sankey and Antonio Andrews.
It's amazing. He scored a point.
My goodness.
Ugh.
Marcus, man, I got to say, so we talked about Kaharski. Did you see his piece where he broke down the supporting cast? I mean, Marcus's rookie year with those receivers, with that offensive line, and with those running backs. You know, he had Delaney. It was him and Delaney Walker playing catch, and everybody else shouldn't have been in the freaking NFL.
There's a reason that they sucked that year.
Yeah, we're not but, very good. But his numbers were actually like pretty freaking good, all things considered, which all lends into, pretty good quarterback.
That'll be the last word from you today. 615-737-1025, our phone number. One more segment with Joe and Ian coming up next. We'll get to more of your thoughts on the Derrick Henry front, on the Tennessee Titans front, as well as I'm halfway choking on myself. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game. Robbie and Rex Road brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com.
Can you say the word dingle nut on the air?
All right, because I have to be careful, Charles. Oh, yeah, you got the same text. Tell your bleep listeners I wasn't comparing Edgerrin James to Derrick Henry. I was making a point about physical running backs having a drop-off. Whatever, Charles, you Derrick Henry hater and Edgerrin James lover, you.
Between Charles' hatred of Derrick Henry and your hatred of Emmitt Smith, it's been quite the day for the running backs on this show.
A lot of haterade. A lot of haterade on the show. Some serious haterade for Brian Callahan.
Speaking of haterade, Andy Ben hates me on the text line. Says, Robbie, the slander you put out on the Colts is hysterical, considering the crap show team that plays locally. You actually think the Titans will sweep the Colts this year? Based on what? You do realize they've been right there in contention for the division, even with lackluster quarterback play the last 2 years.
My eyes are rolling.
Their roster is so much better than the Titans, and it's really not that close. I'd take Daniel Jones over what they had in Minshew when they were a few plays away from defeating the Texans for the division 2 years ago.
The Texans.
You let me know how Daniel. You let me know how Daniel Jones works out.
Yeah. I mean, look, Andy Ben, if you are making yourself feel better at the expense of the Titans, then that's fine. I don't disagree that the Colts have a better roster and that the Titans are a bigger bleep show than the Colts. But Indy Ben, the Colts are a bleep show, buddy. I don't know what else to tell you. Like, if you're excited about this big August competition between Daniel Jones and Anthony Richardson, I mean, look, the Colts are they are better than the Titans, but in the same category. They're a total afterthought in the NFL this year. I'm sorry. And if they end up having this big breakthrough season and surprise everyone, then I welcome your trash talk. But right now I think you're a little delusional.
I mean, when did the Texans clinch the AFC South last year? I'm legitimately asking.
Pretty early.
It was pretty early, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, the whole division.
The whole division was terrible last year. So, I mean, look, you know, Anthony Richardson clearly has not been very good. I've said it. Maybe I'm totally wrong, and Daniel Jones in his second stop is about to pull a Sam Darnold from last year. I would be stunned if I saw it.
Quick search says not till December.
Right. But I mean, December. But,
yep.
Like, what are we talking, early December?
It says December 15th.
Okay. So about mid December.
Yeah.
That's early. Still with 3 weeks left in the regular season. Yeah. Like, you know, it's not like the Colts are they've not won the division since when? 14? So, yeah, they got close with Rivers. And they got close-ish with Minshew in C.J. Stroud's rookie year.
I mean, that is a great point. Indy Ben, the Colts, the AFC freaking South.
It's terrible.
You haven't been able to win that in more than a decade. My God, that's embarrassing.
So, again, I'm not trying to, like, sit here and defend the Titans because, you know, like, we just went through the schedule earlier. Like, I said 6 wins at first glance for the Titans, and that's me being incredibly optimistic. I think there's a chance they may end up at, like, 4 or 5.
And I think that is the difference between you and me. I think I have them splitting the Colts. Yep. You have them sweeping, so I have them at 5. But
I have them sweeping the Colts and the Jags, but this, mainly because of who's playing quarterback for the Colts and those two idiots running the Jags.
But this texter, I think, has a great point before we get out of here. It says the Titans ruined Marcus. I mean, I think that's something that we should probably explore more on the show. I don't know what you think about that, but, you know.
Yeah, I wonder if the Titans feel that way. That would explain partially why they are where they are in the standings right now. There's inability to absorb reality.
I mean, if Vrabel, they made the Tannehill switch and all that stuff, but like they still like look at that second half at Kansas City. Tannehill didn't get the job done. What would Marcus have done?
Yeah.
In that second
could
half,
could have run the speed option.
He could have made a run just like Mahomes did on that the end of the first half. You just don't know. We don't know what would have happened.
You don't know. That's true.
I do remember covering a Marcus Wynn in that same stadium just a couple years earlier. Oh well, he's pretty good.
We'll see. Any Ben going back at me, why do I think the Titans will sweep the Colts? Because I think Daniel Jones sucks. And I think Cam Ward might have a chance to be good. There you go. That's why. Am I totally confident that the Titans are going to sweep the Colts? No, I'm not. I just read through a schedule that had the Titans getting to 6 wins.
I can't wait for the 2 Mondays after those games when Indy Ben and Robbie go at each other.
He'll probably put it at that on point the remember that Daniel Jones and or Anthony Richardson is his quarterback. We'll have to worry about it then. That does it for us today. Chase and Big Joe is coming up next. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3, The Game.